Well, the moral of the story is don't jump to conclusions. You can't judge a book by its cover. And so be careful about being quick to judge others. Guard against hasty opinions and inaccurate conclusions about people. Back in the 90s, we were living in another state. On a Sunday afternoon, we had some prospective buyers come to look at an adjacent lot next to our home. And the couple, the man was black and the woman was white. And Johnny and I spent some time welcoming them and answering questions, showing them the lot, talking about the schools and the neighboring area. And several days later, one of our neighbors said to my wife, "I heard that a black guy is buying the lot next to you and building a house. I really hope he doesn't build something shabby that will bring down the value of our homes." Johnny quickly stated that we did not share our neighbor's concern, and she defended our new friends as being very nice. So fast forward, they did end up becoming our new neighbors, buying the lot, and ironically, they ended up building a beautiful home of over 4,000 square feet in size that was big enough that not only our house, but our prejudiced neighbor's house combined could fit inside of their new home. The new house didn't drop the housing values, I assure you. It did just the opposite. It served to increase the value of every home on our road. Do you see why we need to study this teaching on how to avoid judging? Prejudice means to prejudge. It's to rush to judgment without all the facts about a person or a situation. So today's the final message in our five-week series called Message from the Mount. And we focused on Jesus' Sermon on the Mount teaching found in Matthew chapters 5, 6, and 7. We've explored relevant topics from answering questions about enemies, to priorities, to worry, to prayer. And today in our final message on judging, we turn to Matthew 7, and we'll discover just what did Jesus teach about judging. Doesn't everybody do it? Are Christians to be different than the rest of the world? Should our attitudes display grace and grant the benefit of the doubt? Shouldn't a Christian's Facebook posts avoid negativity and hasty conclusions and snarky comments about others? When is it okay to judge, and when is it a sin? What makes the difference? Well, today I want us to understand this vital distinction. We should not be judgmental, but we should use wise judgment. As Jesus was giving his most famous message to the multitude gathered on that Judean hillside 2,000 years ago, what he said still has meaning from the Mount for us today. He gave two warnings, and let's start with the first. And we begin reading in Matthew chapter 7, verse 1. Matthew's the first book of the New Testament. It begins on, our text is on page 673 if you reach for that paperback Bible in front of you. And if you need a Bible, please take that copy home with you as our gift. So the first warning that he gives, Jesus says, don't be judgmental. Verse 1, do not judge or you too will be judged. For in the same way that you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take that speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you can see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. This passage cautions us not to be hypercritical or judgmental of others. Jesus is warning us that if you are quick to be critical of others, you can expect that same treatment. Or in other words, criticism boomerangs. What goes around comes around. Some refer to it as karma. And Jesus says, if you dispense judgment on a sparing, judicious basis, that's what you can expect. But likewise, if you measure it up with a heaping, hasty scoop of criticism, then that's what you will generally receive from others as well. He says, don't be judgmental of others. In verse 2, he stresses, do not judge or you too will be judged. And this is really the converse of Christ's golden rule, do to others as you would have others do to you. He's saying, this is a warning, don't tear others down if you don't want others to tear you down. The restriction, do not judge, I think takes place on two levels. One meaning applies to the horizontal, how you get along with your fellow man. And if you are frequently negative and critical of others, then you can expect criticism from others. The other level refers to the vertical relationship, what you can expect from God. Verse 1 says, if you judge others, you will be judged by God. So listen, church, that means that if you are critical, judgmental, quick to find fault, if you possess a critical spirit, you're overly exacting of others, then you can expect God to judge you similarly. British Bible scholar Martin Lloyd-Jones accurately observed, the spirit of hypercriticism is one which is concerned with personalities rather than principles. We are really interested in the person we are attacking, not in the particular subject or principle. Our real desire is to condemn the person rather than to get rid of the evil that is in the person. In this passage, Jesus is pointing out to us that self-examination is to precede constructive criticism. He's commanding, take care of your own business before you tell others what you think is wrong with them. So let's continue reading in verse 3. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take that speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your eye, then you can see clearly to help remove the speck from your brother's eye. As Jesus was giving the Sermon on the Mount, he resorted to the device of hyperbole, providing an exaggeration as a form of humor to make his point. So he told his listeners, if you notice that your brother has something in his eye, some small microscopic speck, yet you have a telephone beam protruding from your own eye, this giant plank, then how can you say to your brother, let me help you remove that little speck? And his original hearers would have laughed out loud at this outrageous image of his statement that was conjured up for them. Jesus was saying, hey, don't be a hypocrite. First, take care of your own major issues, because before you go around being hypercritical, trying to fix everyone else's lives. So that metaphor is used of an eye surgery. A few years ago, my dad had a cataract surgery, and you can imagine if the doctor had come into the operating room and again had a plank protruding from his eye, we would have called a quick timeout and rescheduled the surgery with another doctor. And so Jesus is trying to give us this crazy perspective of an individual trying to help someone else when they're not ready to do that. He can't possibly offer any constructive aid until he rids his own life of some glaring inconsistencies. She can't offer any constructive input until she gets her own life fine-tuned. And so Jesus is warning us about that self-examination is to precede offering constructive criticism to others. I'll give you an example from my own life. When my brother and I were little, my mom kept a written record of some of the funny things that we said, and she compiled those into a book, then gave those to my dad one year on Father's Day. And so she had a listing from this week, July 23rd, when I was 5 and my brother was 3, and this was her entry for July 23rd. Before breakfast, David said, "We don't need to say our prayer." Jeff said, "Well, I do." And then Jeff said, "I think you're cute, David, but not when you do things like that." They talked it over, and soon David folded his hands and listened to Jeff's prayer. "Dear God, thank you that I can see. Thank you that I can hear. Thank you that I can talk. Thank you for my new Dr. Ben Casey toy kit. In Jesus' name, amen." And then my mom wrote, "And Jeff forgot completely to mention the food after his little sermon to David." Now, why is it that others' imperfections are so glaring, so blatant to us, but our own inconsistencies are not so immediately obvious to us? The problem with our judging others is that we can often get it wrong. John Caldwell is a minister friend of mine in Indianapolis, and he wrote about an experience at their church. She drove through the pouring rain and the flooded streets to Kingsway, leaving her husband at home recuperating from cancer surgery. The church building was in sight when it happened. The splash of the cold water combined with the engine heat cracked the distributor cap on her car, leaving her stranded in the middle of the downpour. Thankfully, God sent two angels in the form of two Kingsway men who pushed her car the short remaining distance onto the church parking lot where her car would be safe and out of the way until it could be repaired. Although running late, she hurried into worship, thankful to be there. However, after church, she found a note on her car from an anonymous judge who called her an inconsiderate idiot because her car was taking up two parking places. I think it's easy for us to make faulty judgments when we don't know all the facts. And anonymous notes received here are discarded without being read. They are the equivalent of a drive-by shooting. Those who resort to that approach don't want to discuss or seek clarification. They only want to judge without any dialogue. Caldwell concludes, "Let me urge you to avoid making hasty judgments about others. It can do irreparable harm." In regard to the lady with the stalled car, she was gracious and she excused the insensitive critic by saying, he was probably having a bad day. Thinking about what if that car had belonged to an unsaved guest who was visiting the service. The impact of that brief self-expression in that note then takes on eternal ramifications. What we say and do has significance far beyond the moment and the people immediately involved. All right, warning number one, don't be judgmental. The teaching on judging resumes down a few verses lower in verse 15 of Matthew 7 with the second warning in this passage, do use wise judgment. We've heard a lot about profiling in the news, whether that's a policeman making a traffic stop or whether that's the common traits of a terrorist being considered by a TSA worker at the airport, being sifted and evaluated. We're all faced with questions about judging and making judgments. Is it possible for us to avoid sweeping generalizations about a whole group, a team, a political party, or a race? Can we learn to deal with the specific actions rather than assume the worst and project our previous experience with one onto an entire nationality? And the answer is yes. And Jesus tells us how to discern the differences. Let's keep reading in verse 15. Watch for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing, yet inwardly they are ferocious wolves. By their fruit you will recognize them. Do people pick grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? Likewise, every good tree bears good fruit, but a bad tree bears bad fruit. A good tree cannot bear bad fruit, and a bad tree cannot bear good fruit. Every tree that does not bear fruit is cut down and thrown into the fire. Thus, by their fruit, you will recognize them. Jesus is saying, don't be easily deceived. Be discerning. Certain situations require making a judgment. If that's choosing a babysitter or a daycare, you want a place where your child will be safe. If that's selecting elders and deacons, you want men who meet the spiritual qualifications. If it's buying a used car, you need to make some judgments about what you're being told and if that's accurate. And when it's hiring a new employee, you want to consider all the aspects to that hire. I like the joke about the florist who had hired a new delivery man and received a phone call complaining over this bumbling new delivery man's efforts. So the call said, we're over at the church and we're preparing for a building dedication. And the card attached to our flowers says, may you rest in peace. The florist responded, you think you have problems? Somewhere across town right now in a funeral home at a visitation, next to a casket, there's a floral display with a card that reads, good luck in your new location. It can be very dangerous to fail to discern wisely. So we must make wise judgments. Don't be easily deceived. Instead, discern people by their fruit. I had a professor in Bible college who reminded us that while we are not to be harsh or judgmental, we are called to be fruit inspectors. In the context where Jesus warns us not to be overly critical or judgmental in those opening verses, just a few verses lower in the same chapter, he clearly shows us that wise discernment is not restricted, but recommended. We have a duty to make decisions or responsible judgments. We are to discern on the basis of people's actions. Are they wolves in sheep's clothing? By their fruit, you will recognize them. And this involves making a judgment or a determination about the motive of why someone asks you or tells you something. At times we must decide, is this flattery designed to manipulate? Is this criticism coming from another's insecurity? Is this an attack that's a payback or seeking revenge? Is this favor designed to obligate me? Or is this a sincere statement worthy of acceptance at face value? Kathleen Hayden writes, the morning after our 20-year-old daughter, Colleen, came home from college for a holiday break, she came into the living room all sleepy-eyed and bundled in her robe, and she cuddled up next to me and put her head on my shoulder. Colleen, Hayden said, stroking her hair, her daughter's hair nostalgically, when you were a little girl, you would crawl up on my lap at the breakfast table and you would say, "Cheerios, Mommy, Cheerios." After the briefest moment of silence, Colleen whispered, "MasterCard, Mommy, MasterCard." Well, you have to wonder about her motives there. Well, Jesus commanded the 12 apostles to be wise as serpents and yet harmless as doves. So how can we make accurate judgments? We must learn to recognize truth from counterfeit. Do you know how bank tellers primarily are trained to detect counterfeit money? They are trained to become so familiar with handling genuine currency that almost immediately they can detect the slightest variation in weight, in texture, or in appearance of a phony bill. Verses 16 and 17 are given in the context of a message zeroing in on judging. And Jesus explains that making determinations is not only acceptable, but it is our responsibility. And that's how we can recognize truth from the counterfeit. By their fruit, that is, by their actions, by their behavior, by the evidence of their deeds, by their track record, you shall know them. Do grapes come from thorn bushes? No. Do figs come from thistles? No. The 2020 presidential candidates' debates have already begun. And it reminded me of years ago when singer and actor Sonny Bono spent over $100,000 of his own money in his successful campaign to win the election to become the mayor of Palm Springs, California. Did I mention that the mayor's job pays a modest salary of $15,000 a year? So he spent $100,000 to get a job that pays $15,000 a year. So we can make a judgment about several things. One, Sonny really wanted very badly to be a civil servant and have that job, or maybe he wanted the notoriety of participating in politics, and maybe this was done for his own ego gratification. But one thing is certain, he didn't take that part-time job for the money. That's one judgment that we can definitely make. The Apostle Paul cautions us to guard against a sense of spiritual pride or moral superiority over those who stumble. In Galatians 6:1, he cautions, "Brothers and sisters, if someone is caught in a sin, you who live by the Spirit should restore that person gently." Not harshly, gently. "But watch yourselves, or you may also be tempted." Well, I would never do something like that. I can't believe what he did. "Watch yourself, or you may be tempted. Carry out each other's burdens. Carry each other's burdens, and in this way, you will fulfill the law of Christ." The most important thing for us to remember is that someday God will serve as judge for you and for me. Hebrews 9:27 says, "Just as people are destined to die once, after that to face judgment." The Christian need not fear that moment. If you're already walking with the Lord and covered by his grace, you've been obedient to him, then that courtroom appearance will only be a formality, because your defense attorney, Jesus Christ, is the judge's son, and he will represent us in that celestial courtroom. This will be predetermined by our previous earthly responses to him. We each must be ready at all times for that unavoidable appointment. Regardless of what you have accomplished in life, your successes, your gains, your advances, your trophies, what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world but loses his soul? What can a man give in exchange for his soul? I want to close with a final reminder about judging. One spring, sometime before the Civil War, a boy in search of work came to Worthy Taylor's prosperous Ohio farm. The farmer knew nothing much about the boy except that his name was Jim, and he gave him a job. And Jim spent the summer cutting firewood for the stove and bringing in the cows and just helping wherever needed on the farm. He ate in the kitchen, and he slept in the hayloft. But before the summer was over, Jim had fallen in love with Taylor's daughter. And when the farmer refused to let the boy marry, he told him very bluntly, "You have no money, you have no name, and very poor prospects." So heartbroken, Jim put his belongings in his old carpet bag, and he left to find other work. Well, 35 years passed before Taylor one day pulled down his barn to make way to build a new one. On one of the rafters up above the hayloft where Jim had slept, he discovered that Jim had carved his full name, James A. Garfield. He was, at that moment, the current president of the United States. Do not judge. That neighbor kid helping you with some yard work might grow up to be your president. We can't tell from the outside. And so we want to be discerning and making judgments, but we don't want to be harsh and judgmental toward people. And if you don't have your business taken care of with the Lord, then we offer this invitation right now as a chance for you to get your questions answered and speak to one of our Next Steps volunteers about how you can respond to the Lord, what it means to give him your life and to live for him, so that when you do appear before him as judge someday, that his son can be your advocate, your attorney. Would you stand right now? We're going to sing. If you need to respond, come to the front while we're singing.